You're listening to Marketplace. I'm Molly Wood. Representatives of almost 200 countries are about to descend on Paris this week for this year's high-profile climate change summit, where every country will show up with its own pledge to cut emissions. Call it the BYO pledge. Then at the meeting, everyone promises that they'll follow through on the pledge and maybe even do a little more. Turns out there may be a fatal flaw in this plan. It's called the free rider problem. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong explains.
Let's be honest. Say you have a big group project. Wouldn't you be tempted just a little to sit out and mooch off everybody else's work? That's free riding. And to many economists, it's a problem that dooms the climate talks. This group includes William Nordhaus at Yale. He's an original architect of climate change economics and is frequently on the Nobel shortlist.
Countries have an incentive under Kyoto-type agreements and all the agreements since then to talk as if they're going to do something, then do very little, and ride free on the efforts of others.
If you need examples of free riding, it's leaving dirty dishes in the sink for other people to wash. It's not pitching in for pizza.
Or in military systems where you see something like NATO, where other countries are free riding off the military power and spending of the United States.
He says the reason people in countries free ride is basic self-interest. The cost of doing something can be far bigger than the benefit to them. And cutting carbon pollution works just that way.
What countries are being asked to do is undertake costly steps, install renewable energy systems, but the benefits spill over all around the world and are not dependent on whether they participate or not.
To spell it out for the U.S., we have 4% of the world's people, but our work would benefit us and the entire other 96%, plus their kids, plus their grandkids. Now, at this point, you might cast this as a problem of greed, of selfish people. But as an economist, Nordhaus doesn't look at how people should act. He looks at how they do act.
I run this game, cooperation game, in class. I actually ran it once with Yale faculty. I run it with, that must have been run thousands of times. It always differs a little bit, but the general finding is most people don't cooperate. Some people do.
The basic problem is sovereignty.
Scott Barrett is a natural resource economist at Columbia University. He says the way the world works is you can't force another country to do anything. Well, short of bombing it.
So you can negotiate an agreement that tells countries what they need to do, but countries don't need to sign it. Or they could sign it, but not ratify it. Or they could ratify it and not implement it. Or they could not implement it and withdraw from it.
Barrett says that's exactly how the climate talks have gone. Let's go back briefly to 1992 and the so-called UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. The UN Secretary General back then was Boutros-Ghali.
This convention does contain important commitments to mitigate and adapt the climate change.
That was a voluntary deal. Now, 5 years later in Kyoto, the world's rich countries reached a binding treaty. But to critics, it was a little like a binding speed limit without any fines. Eileen Clausen at Elon University was part of the U.S. delegation at Kyoto. She says negotiators tried to include penalties for backsliders.
It actually never went very far. I mean, I think it's very hard in international agreements to figure out a set of penalties, because in the end, you couldn't get enough countries to want it.
That allowed two non-cooperators. China stayed on the sidelines. And the U.S., it signed the protocol, then didn't even try to ratify it.
The combination of looking at the United States, the largest emitter, and China, the second largest emitter at that point, not really participating fully, I think that did give some impetus to those countries like Canada, who said, well, I'm not doing it either.
Indeed, Canada withdrew from its Kyoto pledge about 4 years ago. And last week, the UK announced it may miss its targets, none of which surprises Columbia Scott Barrett.
So long as there are almost any free riders, these people have a corrosive effect on cooperation by the cooperators, and the cooperation just drops over time.
Fundamentally, he says something big is missing from these talks. They focus on climate science, oceans, glaciers, emissions, timelines, but they don't address climate negotiation science. That is the social science of self-interest, cooperating, free riding, which is why he says they've not worked.
And ever since these negotiations began, emissions have gone up. Concentrations have gone up year after year after year. There's no sign even of a reduction in the rate of increase. By any measure, that is a failure.
He and Nordhaus argue it's time to scrap the whole structure of climate talks. Start over. Build a new system that flips the incentives. Perhaps make it like a trade deal where countries want to be in and they enjoy low tariffs. And if they drop out, bam, trade sanctions. A total reboot.
I think I have significant difficulty with that.
Negotiating veteran Eileen Claussen has no issue with these academic ideas. Politically, though, no chance.
I'm not sure that I would like to replace something, even though it's not been that successful, with nothing, because I think that's worse.
Indeed, at the Paris talks, negotiators will stay the course, pledge emissions cuts, add them up, and hope to be more ambitious tomorrow. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.